Welcome to Comically Pedantic, where we take a detailed look at the complicated concepts and the characters and the history of comic book culture. It's the me, again, one of the hosts. My name's Corinne. And then also on the show since the beginning, which is not me, is Derek. That's the other host. He's here too. Hi, Derek. How are you?
Hello. Oh, what a fun intro.
Do you like every how progressively more unhinged I turn it? There's we are the duality of people where you are just like, I say it real fast. This is how I do it. And it's crispy. And then I'm just like, I don't know.
if you know any comedians, right?
Yeah.
One of the things that a lot of the comedians that I know have talked about really enjoying is watching someone go on stage and either do something that they were completely unprepared for or to completely bomb and like just to have that experience. And part of it is just because it is such a strange and new thing that like it becomes a show in and of itself. And it's really entertaining to watch. And I feel like the way that you put sentences together tends to follow this, like, the same kind of logic of, like, I don't know where this is going.
I like that you were basically like, I am a pre-written script and Corinne is improv theater. Anyway, what's your bright spot? I have no segue today.
I love the lack of segue. So my bright spot is I went to the bookstore again and I bought two books. And so far, I'm reading both of them. So far.
Oh, you read two books at the same time?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes
my brain could never.
Sometimes you need a little bit of a break. Okay, this is a little bit easier because one is nonfiction and one is fiction. So,
okay.
Like, one is more of an... Okay, so I bought two books. So far, they're both good. One is a horror book with, like, some political... leanings to it. It is called Feed by Mira Grant. So far, I'm really enjoying it. The other one, the nonfiction one, is called Hi Honey, I'm Homo, which is by Matt Baum. And it is a look at sitcoms from like the 50s up to today and sort of detailing like how queer culture and like queer people are portrayed through them and like why they're portrayed that way. And it's
right.
Really interesting. I very much enjoy it. I read a chapter on Bewitched and about how the show like never addresses gay people in the show, but there is a lot of subtext to the show about the gay experience.
Right.
It's a lot of fun. I'm enjoying both of them. In very different ways.
Cool. I think that sounds fun. I think that would make sense, like how you are able to read kind of flip-flop between the two in the same period. I am very much like a hyper-focused completionist when it comes to reading. Yeah. I'm like, this is the book that I'm reading and I gotta finish it. And I won't pick anything else up until I finish it because I feel bad for the other book.
I kind of understand that. No, I do understand the feeling bad part because I tend to feel bad in the same way, but I talk myself out of it because it's like it's an inanimate object. It doesn't understand.
Yeah. Maybe I watched Toy Story a little too much as a kid.
Could be.
I was like, if I turn around, they're going to start moving. No. Yeah, I don't know. And I think it's also like, I think if I get distracted by another book, I'll forget too much of the first book and then I'll have to go backwards and I don't want to go backwards. I think that's the other thing for me. That's probably the main thing for me.
Yeah, that makes sense too. I mean, again, it's a lot easier here because one is...
Again, there's such different genres. Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, we're going to end up talking way too much about books. I could talk all day about
We're going to talk about different books instead. We're going to talk about my books, the books that I read, like Sandman.
Well, which you wait, also read. You didn't answer your bright spot. You got to do that first.
I tried to segue out of my answer. I got to go to a Front Bottoms concert with your lady, and I had a great time.
I got a lot of videos.
Oh, did you? I took some not great videos because I am a responsible but silly adult. So I was just really excited to be there and then like forgot that my phone existed a couple times. And then I was like, oh wait, I should take a photo of the stage so I don't forget this moment when I am like 72. Right. But it was a great concert. It was the Front Bottoms like 10-year anniversary of one of their like beginning albums. And so like Max had surprised me with the tickets literally the day before and was also like, Austin's coming up. And I was like, oh my God, Max arranged a play date. I'm so excited.
Yeah, I was at work.
I had a great time.
I was at work that night and I just kept opening my phone to find like videos of it. Who else was there? Like, was anyone?
AJJ.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Because I don't know that band as well as I know the Front Bottom.
I knew them more than I thought I would. I thought Austin I had never really liked heard any songs. Yes. Yes. That is correct. But I thought that I didn't like know any songs from them. But then they would like, they would play, like, I would recognize, like, verses and stuff. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, shit, I know more about this than I thought. And I got very excited by that. But, yeah, that was a great time. I had a real hoot. I'm actually wearing my sweatshirt right now. It's got a peach and a plum because that's one of my favorite songs. And that was the sweatshirt that they were selling.
I think so Austin got a... She got something there because I recognized the name on it.
Oh, well, she got, yeah, it's Talent. It's probably Talent of the Hawk.
Yes.
That was the 10-year anniversary album. But she got us matching t-shirts and then she got me the sweatshirt and I was like, oh my God, I'm so excited. So, and then I got us a bunch of Insomnia Cookie, which is top tier. Speaking of top tier things like Insomnia Cookie. You know what you do when you don't have insomnia? You sleep. And when you sleep, you dream. And that's where Sandman comes in. We're going to talk about Bloody Sandman today. Book two. Woo, woo, woo.
Okay. So book two, where does this start?
So book two starts with a story called Seasons of Mist. We have ended book one after a couple of shorter tales, like Dream of a Thousand Cats kind of thing, Calliope, and then Facade, like a bunch of those little ones. But the big stories to come out of book one were the origin story and the Dollhouse storyline, which is with the Vortex and the Corinthian and the blah, 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 and all that.
Right, right.
So book two, we're going to go over another two pretty large storylines and then just a couple little shorter fun ones. And we are going to go through them with the same tier ranking as the previous episode. So to kind of remind people, like, how is Corinne determining where things go, whether they're S tier, A tier, or poopy C tier. But we're going to rank it off of whether I found it memorable or not. Did I, like, if somebody talks about this story, like, is this one of the first things that comes to my mind when I think of Sandman? Was I invested in the story while I was reading it? And then did it give me a lot of feelings? I don't care really what the feelings were. I want to know if they were strong or not. So let's dive into it. Book two. Woo, woo, woo. We're going to start with one of the big stories right off the bat. It, again, is called seasons of Miss. And this story is pretty much like, hey, what if Lucifer just gave up hell? He was like, I'm retiring. Who's stopping me? And kind of to fuck with Sandman, he gives him the keys to hell. He's like, here you go. Have fun. Figure it out. Because the main reason Lucifer is like doing this is because previously in a different story, in a different book, him and Sandman had a kind of like mind battle, essentially. And Sandman won. So Lucifer is very jaded. And that is really kind of the motive as to why he gives the keys to Sandman. And then the whole story pretty much goes from there and is like, you know, what's he going to do with the keys? Is he going to keep them? Is he going to give them to someone else? Because there are lots of characters that would love to have the gates of hell in their control. And these are all like mostly like new characters. Some of them are reoccurring. There is a demon. I think his name is like Azazel.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. He was in book one, mentioned before. And he had to do with like Sandman getting like his helm back, kind of. So it's all these people and characters, they're going, trying to come up with their like why I should have hell as my own or my realm kind of situation. And then they come to a conclusion in the end. You also do get a bit of redemption and kind of a good circle back with a different character. I don't know if you remember when we talked about Tales in the Sand. It's like that love story between Sandman and the One Queen. And she like dies and she ends up in hell as like a punishment. She comes back and it kind of becomes like, here's a redemption moment for Sandman, because maybe he wasn't the best boyfriend. Be better, Sandman. So he gets that opportunity, and then you can read it for yourself to see if you think he used his opportunity well or not. So that's all I'm going to tell you about the story. Did I find it memorable? I think I tend to find the larger stories memorable. Yes. Just because I think Neil Gaiman knows, like, hey, this is going to be a big deal. And, like, I feel like he just knows what he's doing with, like, big event stuff. And generally, I think they are good reads. I like them. Yes, I remember the story quite well. And so I think it is moderately memorable. I think like maybe Dollhouse or the other one we're going to talk about, I might have them more in the forefront of my mind. But yeah, it's memorable. Was I invested in the story? I was pretty invested. I really liked kind of how the Sandman brings all these characters together to hear like their arguments as to why they deserve, you know, hell and all this stuff. And it's kind of cool to see like, to learn about their motives and everything. And they're just like, they're cool characters to look at because they're all so different and funky. Like some of them are from like Egyptian mythology. Some of them are from Nordic mythology. Like,
those were actually the two that came to my mind first.
Some of them are from there. Some of them are like fairies and stuff from the Midsummer issue. So it's like there, you know, there's a lot of cool things going on. I mean, like demons are all never going to be not interesting to look at because they always got something colorful or funky going on. So yeah, I think I was like pretty, I was interested to see like, oh, who's he going to give it to? This is going to be pretty funky. I also wanted to know like, would he set his former lover free? Like, what's he gonna do? Feelings. I mean, like, I don't think I had any, like, strong, like, I don't know. It didn't hit my sensitive side quite much. Like, I wasn't emotionally invested. I was just kind of like, oh, this is a fun, interesting read. And I want to see what happens. But I don't think it really, like, tugged on heartstrings or made me feel, like, super, like, on the edge of my seat. Like, oh, my God. So for that, I think it's going to be, like, lower on the scale. I think I would give this one either an A or B tier. I don't think it's quite S tier because I know that I can have quite an emotional reaction to Sandman stories, and that did not happen in this one. I think also I just found that I don't want to spoil the ending because, again, I want people to read this and I want them to have, like, a real reaction to reading it. But I found the ending to be kind of like, I just felt like I kind of went like, oh, interesting. Okay. Cool.
I do think the ending is interesting, but I don't think it necessarily fits with kind of where you're thinking everything is going to go, what your expectations are for a story that is set up this way.
Yeah, like, if you had to say there was, like, a plot twist, like, I don't know if you could call it that big of a plot twist, though. I think it's more of, like, a plot askew,
Not to fully give it away, but honestly, what comes to my mind is the Deus Ex Machina. Like, it is just sort of like, we have a problem. We have to do all this thing, and then literally, here's the solution is given from someone else.
Yeah.
And it kind of works in that regard, but I think it might be a little too clever and not as interesting. Well, I think the idea of how it is resolved is very interesting, but just not for this story.
Yeah, I guess so. So I think I'm leaning it towards B tier. I think.
If I were to rank it,
I don't know though. What would you give it? Would you give it an A or a B?
I would give it a B. I genuinely love so much of that story.
Same.
But as a story on its own, I didn't really care for it as much. And I thought it was interesting because when I was reading it for the first time, the person who gave me that was their favorite story
in
Sandman. And they were surprised it wasn't mine. And actually my favorite, they didn't really like.
The one that I think your favorite is, I am not surprised that it is your favorite.
I'm so curious. I'm ready for it. But Seasons of Mist, I think, is a great setup.
Yes. You also, I will say this now. You do get to meet more of the Endless characters. So we meet Destiny, because Destiny kind of gives the intro to this story. You also you don't really meet Despair in the previous book, but you are introduced to Despair, who is Desire's, like, kind of Gemini twin almost. And then you meet Delirium. And now Delirium...
This is the first appearance of Delirium, I guess.
Yes, it is. Because she wasn't in the first one at all. I'm just going to double check.
I'm pretty sure, no.
Because, this is definitely the first time because they, like, intro that Delirium used to be something else.
Yes.
And I can't remember the word.
Delight.
That delight. Oh my God. There we go. I was like, it's a D word. And it was a nice word, but now I can't remember it. So yeah, delirium used to be delight, but then it transitioned into delirium because it was too delightful. Kind of.
I personally find this character to be very delightful, but I also understand delirium, why that is more appropriate.
Oh yeah, for sure. But yeah, so you meet those three. You are also introduced to the fact that they do have another sibling, but they are either banished or missing or have run away. We don't know what the title of
that. Oh, they don't reveal their title in this.
No, they just keep saying like our brother, your brother, Kishimi's brother. I don't know. So I don't know who it is. I want to know who it is. And in Seasons of Mist, they do kind of like use that like unknown missing character. Some of them use it as kind of like leverage.
Yeah.
Being like, oh, I might know where your brother is. Give me hell. Hee hee. And then Sandman's like, I'll think about it. But yeah, I think we're going to give that a B tier. So I got to mark it and then we're going to move to book. Okay. So the next story that we are going to talk about is called Thermidor. Thermidor is a shorter story and it takes place during the French Revolution. So there is a character, her name is Joanna Constantine.
Yeah, it's so I always say Constantine, but technically it's Constantine.
We will respectfully call her Constantine. Or just Joanna. Her name's Joanna. And she this Joanna is, how do I say it? Like either the granddaughter or the great granddaughter of a previous Joanna. In a different story. Do you remember when we talked about the one where it's like the man who won't die?
Yes.
And then him and Sam may become friends. Okay. So when they meet at the bar like forever ago, they run into like this current Joanna's like ancestor and they have a little scuffle. But so basically Thermidor is about Sandman goes to Joanna and is like, hey, you gotta take... I'll find my son's head. And you gotta make history with it. And so literally, like, she goes on a whole mission throughout the French Revolution and collects the head of Orpheus. Dun-dun-dun. Sandman is Orpheus's dad. And she basically, like, uses his head to, like, viva la revolution. And that is pretty much it. It is a fun story. I don't know if I was super invested in it, because I was like, French Revolution my favorite part of history to learn about or like think about? Not really. But I thought Joanna was cool. So I was like, boy, I hope she makes it out alive. And I thought it was like cool that you get introduced to Orpheus and the fact that like him and Sandman are related. I was like, that's cool. And like, that's honestly kind of my only thoughts about this. Like, it's memorable enough that I could be like, oh yeah, hey, there was that one time where we thought about the French Revolution and Morpheus together. What a time. But it was okay. So I think I would give this one just like solid B tier. I think it's just in the B. Is basic, is fine. It's a good quick romp. Good quick Sandman read. I think I maybe wanted a little more Sandman, but it's okay. Because I know sometimes he's not like always like the main thing in his issues, and that's okay. I think for this one, I just wanted a little more this time.
And that's genuinely forgot about this story.
So, yeah.
I mean, it is like when you described it, I was like, oh yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of fun. I don't know. I just like it because there's a lot of points where they're like, where is this head? And it's like, I love that they're just looking for a head. And it's, what a time. Super quick. Anyway, the next one is called Augustus. The next kind of like few, there's like three stories in a row that are all kind of like month-based. And I thought it was really fun in the book. I was like, ooh, this is cool. And I think only I thought it was cool. I don't know if anyone's ever noticed it. I had a cute time with it, though. But Augustus is about in Rome, you have like Emperor Augustus, and he spends the day disguised as a beggar. And he just uses that to, like, see his people and, like, witness his people with different perspective. And it's a very short thing. It's very much like a conversation almost with him and, like, his... I guess it's like you would call it, like, a squire kind of. Because his helper, like, assists him into getting out of, like, the castle. And basically, right. He's just doing this because, like, he had a dream and like Morpheus came to him in the dream with like a prophecy. And this is like here's a look into a character. Ain't this fun? I thought this was maybe a little less memorable than the Thermidor one. Because it's just kind of like, all right, I don't really know what to do with this, but like, all right. I wasn't like majorly invested because it was very minimal. It was like the least amount of Sandman that there has been in a Sandman comic. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, I thought it was... I had some nice feelings from reading it. Because I was like, yeah, it's an old man and a young man having a conversation. And they're talking about life together. And it seems like, you know, they're trying to, you know, have some sort of like sympathy or empathy for each other. And I always like when that's like happening. I like empathy. But I think honestly, this is going in C tier with Midsummer. Cause I'm just like, it's good. It's fine. Whatever. So we're giving it a C. I don't know. Do you remember this one at all? Or
I remember that one more than the previous one.
And I remember, okay.
I think it was one of those things where the first time I read it, I really liked it.
Okay.
But I have reread Sandman a few times. And whenever I come to that, I'm always like, oh yeah, I remember liking this. But then it's harder for me to get through because it's like, okay, like I get it.
Yeah.
I know I we're like not you going kinda anywhere.
Get what yeah. You kind of get what they're saying pretty quick.
Yeah.
All right. Here's the next one. This is the second big boy story in book two. And it is Derek's, what I presume his favorite. and it's called A Game of You. Is that your favorite? Did I get it right?
This Hell is yeah. absolutely my favorite.
Okay. So A Game of You is a really good story. I really, really liked it.
Makes me so happy. I had a great time with it.
So you take the side character from Dollhouse. Her name was Barbie. Now, Barbie used to date this guy named Ken. Ha ha ha. Do you get the joke? I got the joke. They're no longer together because Ken was an ass. And also the Vortex kind of had a bit of play into like fucking with their relationship. But so Barbie is alone at this point in time. And she lives in an apartment complex with some really cool, unique characters. You have a lovely lesbian couple. You have a beautiful trans woman. You've got this reclusive, younger, bookish girl. And then you've got a really weird tenant, or you got a really weird landlord. And basically what happens is Barbie's old dreams are starting to come back to her, and they are finding ways to get into her reality because they need her help. There is a thing known as the Cuckoo that is trying to destroy her dreamland. And they need Princess Barbie to come back and like save the castle. And she's like, all right, fuck it, we ball. And it is like this super cool, like fantasy journey. And now because Barbie has to enter like the dream world, that creates like some problems. The Cuckoo is also trying to get Barbie in the real world. So that also creates some problems. All of the fellow neighbors come into play and like start to help out. And very much like in the Dollhouse, where you have like the dreams that teach you about all the secondary characters, you get a very similar thing with here. So you get really awesome perspectives into like the lives of each individual. And I really, really liked it. I thought it was super good. I thought it was very fantastical, while also keeping me really invested in what could be like real people out in the world. And I really, really liked it. So like, if you couldn't tell already, this one's in friggin' S tier, baby. is and a
that,
game
wait, I think this one actually, I think this one has the least amount of Sandman in it, like pretty much out of, like, because he really only shows up like at the end.
At the end, yeah. But it's also like it makes the most sense.
Oh,
like,
yeah. No, I genuinely love it.
Like his entry into his own story is like so well earned, and it's like delicious when he comes in, and I love it. And he like because he comes in at like the best worst point of the book, and he like makes it all like you're like, oh, everything's gonna be okay now because he's here, like homeboy has arrived,
right?
And it's just such a good story. I really like the character Wanda. She was really great. And like I really felt for, I really liked Wanda and Barbie's friendship. I think it was really special. And they clearly just like, they just loved each other in like this like way that sisters do.
And yeah, like, I think that really was evident that. Like very early on. And I felt like everything between the two of them was super well done.
Yes. Like you could 100% be like, yes, I know the exact kind of friends that these two are. And I loved that. The other thing that I really liked, now I cannot say for sure when this was published.
In 1991 and 1992 are when they were published. Okay. And they were collected in 1993.
Okay. So that's like early 90s.
Oh, yeah.
Before even the Clone Saga started.
Yeah. Like around that area. Yeah. So we're within that ballpark. And look at the massive difference.
Look at the difference, gang. Can you tell which one Corinne likes more? I wonder. Okay, so like for the early 90s, like, and also it's not my place to decide if this is like a good representation or not, because I'm just an ally here. I just like all the people that are good people. I don't really care what you look like and stuff, but I thought that this was pretty good. Like, this was a good trans character, Wanda. Like, yes. You showed that it's like, yes, like, she has a complicated life, but also just look how like kind and happy and supportive of a friend she is. And also look, she has this super kind, supportive, loving friend, like, because this person deserves love. And like, I thought that that was really special. And like a few times in the issue, like there are some like, they do kind of play into the dreams of like, you know, because the bad guy is trying to fuck with them. So obviously is trying to torment them a little bit. And there's some not fun imagery there. And like, also the landlord is a bit like shitty, but yeah. All in all, like everybody's like pretty supportive of like this person just being who they are. And I thought that that was really nice, especially for like the early 90s. And like, I don't know how far you are in your Honey, I'm Homo story. But like, you know, I think like even in like the early 2000s, like just having like LGBTQ representation was a bit tough. And yes. Like Neil's being pretty cool in the early 90s, like just having some good friendships.
I can think of some criticisms that could be lobbied against this. And
I think that's fair. Like I would also say, like, I'm not saying this is a perfect thing.
No. And I don't know how much like I could agree or disagree with those. I just know I can point them out. But
yeah.
I also know that this is not representative of where we were as a society in the early 90s. Like this is leagues above what generally was being published.
I think that is what I am mainly trying to say.
Right.
Because like the main like positive points that I really liked that they did for Wanda was, again, just having those really like, that really solid, good, like loving friendship. And then right. Also at the end, because it's very clear that like Wanda did not have like great parents that were very supportive.
Mm-hmm.
Barbie goes to the funeral. And essentially, like, writes over the gravestone to be, like, the proper name. And I'm like, hell yes. Give her justice. Like,
yes.
We love. I spoiled a bit there, but, like, dodge over it.
Well, I mean, I can tell you, I remember when I finished reading this.
Yeah.
Because I finished, like, I remember, I was in New York. I was in New York at, like, a deli. And I was like, oh, well, I have some time to kill. I'm just going to finish reading. I remember finishing it because I remember going, damn, I loved that whole story. And that ending really hit me.
The ending really hit me, too. It was very good. So, yeah, again, this is not a perfect piece of material because, again, it was the 90s, and hopefully everybody is growing now. But I like all the different characters, all the different people that are doing their lives, and they're all coming together for one reason, and it's to save the real world and destroy a bird character.
I was saying, the stakes are a little higher in this one than most, too.
The stakes were pretty high. There's a point where like the moon gets affected and it like fucks shit up. It's wild. But yeah, I think this is an S tier. There was not a character that I didn't like. And it's just a really good story. Everyone should read it. So yeah, a game of you guess an S tier. I also realized I skipped one because I was just so excited to talk about a game of you. We have two more. The next one is called Three Septembers and a January. This is one of those month-themed ones because September and January. Basically, it's a short story where, like, despair is like, I'm gonna have a competition with y'all. I'm holding this man in despair.
Oh, I and y'all love gotta this
get
one.
Him, and y'all gotta get him out of it. Good luck. And so it's like Delirium gets a shot. Death is there every once in a while. Desire's there. And then Dream is there. And they're all in competition to like get this man out. And it's pretty cool. It is a bit confusing sometimes, but I think that's just because you got Delirium in there. And like, are you really supposed to have things make sense with a character like Delirium? I liked seeing all the Endless characters kind of like hanging out together. It is interesting what they have this man go through.
Yeah.
He like declares himself a king and like everyone really likes him. And I really liked him.
Which I don't know if you know this. That's based on a real person.
That it felt like a familiar story. Okay. Yeah, like
that right? Person really existed and people really did just kind of play along. Like they were like, all right, you're king, man. And like they were just like,
yeah,
went with it. That was a real thing.
I thought that was great. He was like the king of San Francisco, I think.
Yeah, he I think he's dead now. But
probably.
But no, he was a real person who kind of became like a local celebrity and just like I guess Neil must have heard of him and wrote him in his he died in 1880. He proclaimed himself emperor of I think like the United States, actually, but like just decided that's what he's doing.
Yeah, I loved it. I think this one is an A tier. I think it made me feel very like this is a cool like hometown story kind of thing. I liked, you know, I wanted to know like where this guy was gonna go, and like I just liked how all the Endless characters like came together. In a very weird situation, but like it was still very cool. So yeah, that's an A tier. A tier. The last story is Orpheus, because we already did Game of You because I was too excited to talk about your favorite thing. So Orpheus, as we know now, after Thermidor. Sandman and Orpheus are father and son situation because Calliope was Orpheus's, or not Orpheus's, Calliope was.
Yeah. Well, that's a different story, and that one's called Oedipus.
That one is called Oedipus. Oops. No one needs a Freudian complex here. Anyway. So family tree time, Calliope and Sandman Morpheus Sleepy Time Boy got together at one point and had a baby. And that baby's name was Orpheus. And Orpheus was really good at songs and a singing and being cool.
Hey, that sounds familiar.
I know, right? Hades Town. That's a musical now. And he falls in love with Eurydice, who's just a really cool lady. And they fall in love and they get married. Oh, so cute. Now, here's the thing. The rest of this comic is essentially, if you just read the Greek mythology of Orpheus and Eurydice, they just toss in the conversation of Sandman being like, hey, son, maybe you shouldn't go retrieve your wife who just died and is now in the underworld, because people who go to the underworld and are living don't typically come back. Not a good idea. I will be very upset with you if you do this, because you're basically just like, you're not playing by the universe's rules. And a grief-stricken Orpheus is like, screw you, Dad, I do what I want. La la la, underworld. And yeah, the story goes from there. It's a Greek tragedy, so I think you can assume it doesn't go well. Orpheus don't make it out. Plot twist of like a 1,000-year-old story. And yeah, so Orpheus's head ends up on this really cool island and then somehow ends up in the French Revolution. But such is life. And it is a fun story. It's a fun read. I like Greek mythology. So in terms of memorable points, it's quite memorable. But also, I find a lot of like big Greek mythology stories like this one to be easily memorable. I mean, if you had a story that used to be told only through like spoken word, and then it was eventually written down like forever ago,
it would be memorable.
And now it's got multiple adaptations, like a Sandman comic strip and a musical, and in a popular video game. Like I think it's going to be pretty memorable. Right. So it's pretty easy in over there. Was I invested? Honestly, yeah, I was kind of invested because they got my Greek mytho biased locked down in this one. Did I have a lot of feeling? I don't know if I had a ton of feelings from this one because I knew what was going to happen. And like, I think maybe I got some feelings towards the end because I was like, oh, wow, like this ends with a father and son really not liking each other. But then in a way, I know that in the future, Morpheus Sandman is going to kind of like try and help his son out, you know, by stopping his head from getting in the wrong hands.
So. I mean, it fills that role of tragedy because you can see it. It's not just like what happens to Orpheus, but
feel his knowing pain.
Where it's going and how pretty much everyone involved got screwed over.
Yeah. Well, because you know that it ends with, I mean, Eurydice dies from the beginning. She gets attacked by a wedding guest and then steps on a snake. Orpheus, he ain't coming back because he goofed.
Yeah.
Morpheus, I don't know why I've now chosen to call him Morpheus. I think it's just a lot of rhymes with Orpheus. But Sandman now has a weird relationship with his son, and it takes him a couple like millennia to try and fix it. He obviously is not together with Calliope anymore, so it breaks up another marriage. And then friggin' Hades is just like, hey, what are people doing here that aren't supposed to be here? That's a lot of paperwork for me. Hey-o. So yeah, it really just goofs up a lot of people's day. What a time.
What so how would time. You... Did we already give it a letter title?
No, I don't think we did. I think I got too distracted. I'm going to give it just a good old A tier because I'm biased.
Yeah, Greek mythology is one of those things that you really got to fuck up to make it not fun.
And honestly, well, I don't know. We probably will not keep this rant. I'm just going to stick with, yeah, you're right. Keep that. But I don't know. There's some renditions of Greek mythology that I'm not a big fan of. But I think it's more because, like, I'm not the audience that the people who are writing it are going to, you know? Because I think I've aged out of it. I'm not a big fan of, like, I'm not a big Lore Olympus person. And I think it's just because, like, again, I'm not. I don't
know what that is.
it's like, do you know what Webtoon is?
Oh, yeah.
It's like one of the biggest like webtoons.
Oh, I still have webtoons, but like I did it for like one that was someone said like on CBR or something, like this is one of the scariest webtoons, and I was like, all right, I'm gonna check this out, and I thought it was kind of garbage, so I just didn't really check many others out.
Well, so yeah, so. There's Lore Olympus, and it's like it's mainly the story of Persephone and Hades.
Yeah.
and they kind of make it from my, like, from the bits that I've seen, this kind of, like, Twilight-esque thing.
Wait, do they make Persephone actually like Hades?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Which is, like, I know sometimes, like, in tons of different, like, you know, adaptations, like, that goes back and forth and it's debatable and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But, and I don't think that's too much of, like, what my thing is with it. I don't know. It just feels, like, weird. And, like, I think it's too Twilight teeny bopper for me.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah. I don't know, but if that's the thing that other people like, that is okay. I will not yuck your yum, but I will yuck my yuck, and that is not my favorite thing. But yeah, this adaptation I think is really cool. Big fan. I'm gonna give it an A tier. And that is book two. Whoop-de-doo. Yeah, well, A Game of You is in here, so I guess that is your favorite. But do you have other favorites from this one?
From this particular one?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. The Orpheus one sticks out a lot to me. Because it's one of those, like, I mean, I don't know how much of that is because it's tied to just the Greek mythology. But it does stick out, and I remember really liking it. If I'm going back over, so much of Seasons of Mist I like, but as a story, like, as a whole story, it's not, like, a favorite.
There is one part of Seasons of Mist that I really, really liked, and I would maybe give it, like, S tier. Keeping it separate from the story as a whole.
I think I know what you're talking about, and I really hope I'm right.
I think you are. So there is a point. Okay, so because back to Season of the Mist, Lucifer gives keys of hell to Sandman and fucking leaves. So that means that, like, for a period of time, no one is managing hell.
Yes.
So just anyone can do whatever. Like, they can just leave if they want. So demons leave, and, like, dead people leave. And there's this one issue that just broke my heart.
Yes.
And it is this boy. I'm laughing because I'm so sad. There's this little boy. He's alive, and he is alone at a private school. Because, like, his dad's, like, at a military base or something, and, like, they can't pick him up for spring break or something. So he's alone for the week with, like, the headmaster or whatever of this school, right at the time when hell is not being managed. And this public or this private school is, like, centuries old. So, like, all of the ghosts from, like, centuries past of this private school come back, pretty much as consequence of Lucifer giving up hell. And they just, like, are the worst people. And this poor boy is like, man, I really don't like this. This really sucks. And he makes friends with, like, a young ghost boy who died in the school. And it's a whole journey. And it's very sad, and it has a bittersweet ending to it. It's just a whole time. And I would give that story alone.
That's
S-tier.
When I talk about the things in Seasons of Mist that I really like, that's the first thing that comes to my mind.
I love that we both love, like, really fucked up, like, dark stories. But, well, like, I am a very, like, everything's fine, like, personality.
I have a little bit of trivia for you, just based off of some of what we've talked about.
Oh, okay.
We kind of already mentioned the Emperor of the United States, because, like, that just kind of came up. But a couple of other fun things. So the Dead Boy Detectives that we just talked about.
Yes.
they actually return. Not in Sandman that I know of, but like throughout, like they had their own little mini series published by DC Comics.
Oh, good. Because like, the little boy's like basically like Death is like, yeah, I'll come back to collect you later. Like, you guys have fun. And it's like so cute and I love it. Because it's just his little boys having a nice time in the end, being friends. And I love when people are being friends.
I'm also going to give you something to look forward to. Because they are making a Dead Boy Detectives show.
Ooh, fun.
And so it was originally announced it was going to be on HBO. But recently they announced it's actually going to be added to Netflix instead.
Oh, God, I do have Netflix.
Also, speaking of TV shows, the whole premise of Lucifer closing up shop and leaving hell, that led to a separate series called Lucifer.
Isn't where, that like a TV show where there's like a British man?
Right. So that's loosely based off of the comic book. The comic book is very different from the show.
I gathered.
But, but I mean, that's like a pretty fun idea, you know, to move that. Last bit of trivia, this is much, much smaller. It's not like I was building to this, but the lesbian couple in A Game of You.
I think I know what you're going to say. Can I guess?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So there's a point where one of the women has a nightmare about like a previous relationship, and that previous relationship, the partner in that is in the diner issue.
Right.
It's Judy.
Yes. Judy. Yes. Yeah. That is,
was that the trivia bit?
That was like the biggest part of it. Yeah. Okay. And the thing that I thought was so interesting is that these two, Foxglove and Hazel.
Yes.
They must have been characters that Gaiman really liked. Because
I think so.
If you read more of Gaiman's sort of like Sandman universe stuff, specifically Death, they show back up. That you follow along their lives for a bit. It's I love this shit.
Because I got really invested in their relationship.
Oh, me too. And that was another thing that I really liked about that story was that it showed a complicated lesbian relationship.
Yes.
And it at no point did it feel exploitative. I think at all.
No, exactly. I think
just a genuine relationship.
Yeah. I think that's like the thing that I really like the most about that issue and a lot of his other issues. Like, because you see it a little bit in the diner scene too, kind of. But it's like people are allowed to have complicated relationships and people are also still allowed to like love each other. And I think that is super cool and special. And not a lot of people are good at writing that.
No, not at all.
I think that, going back to, maybe we will add the Lore Olympus rant, but I think that's maybe why I don't like it. Because I think, Persephone and Hades is, I think, in history, one of the most complicated relationships. Because, you know, some interpretations are like, it's the rape of Persephone. It's the kidnapping of Persephone. And then others are like, actually, maybe. And it's a complicated, questionable relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And that is hard to write. And some people don't write it well.
No, and I think, man, just another interesting, fun thing about A Game of You. It is such a feminine story in that
all feminine story.
Well, that's almost every character is a woman. And from different...
And I love that it's like a different... Each individual woman. Like, there's no showing of like Barbie is just like Foxglove, or Foxglove is just
No.
Like
they're all very different. And you have like so many different viewpoints on what it is to be a woman.
And they're all valid, and I love it.
It's so good. Like, I genuinely...
And it was like, the early 90s. Like, can you believe?
I don't want to take anything away from the like what follows in Sandman. Because it's all amazing. It's all good. But that is a high point for me in that series. And I
think there's always, like, a really high point from each book that I've read so far. Because, like, I did really like A Game of You. But, like, holy crap. I still, like... love like Dollhouse, and I love the man that doesn't die. there's too many that I'm like, they're so good because they do encapture like different moods of reading for me. It's really nice.
I think what I like a lot about this book too, this collection, so much of the stories in this second book are all really just different variations of like, well, Morpheus was kind of shit and now he's a little better.
Well, and I think like, so when we first ever talked about Sandman, there was a point that an opinion that I had that like, compared to a lot of other gods that I've read their stories, Sandman felt the most like neutral, you know, right. Like less petty. It was kind of like, well, them's the rules, gotta follow the rules. Instead of being like, I'm gonna turn into a bull and have sex with people. And I really like.
Sorry. It's amazing how many like different like religions have that be like a thing that gods do. Like, I'm thinking,
yeah.
Oh, man.
Or just,
at first I was like, I was like, damn, Zeus. And then I immediately was like, Loki does shit like that, too.
Yeah, it's weird. Stop doing that. But I was like, yeah, he's the most neutral. And then, like, as some stories went on, I was like, oh, he's a little petty. But, like, not in the way that... But he uses, like, his neutrality as, like... a buffer from the pettiness.
Yeah.
And like, it's nice to, I was like, all right, so this character does have flaws, but I was still like, I was in the end, I was okay with them. And then reading the second book, I was like, oh, he's like actually trying to work on himself. And again, that doesn't happen with a lot of like, you know, like deities and stuff right. like that I have found. And I'm like, oh, this is really cool. I like it. What a time. So yeah, I had a great time. I really like these books. Big fan. I think the writing is very good. Top tier all around. Sandman is S tier. Yeah. In conclusion. But yeah, I think one day I will read book three once I eventually get through the current book I'm reading and the Clone Saga.
Yeah.
These episodes have been me hardcore procrastinating reading Maximum Clonage, which will hopefully I will read soon. Who knows? I love that we're basically going to get three episodes in a row of me being like, hi and welcome to Comically Pedantic.
I did, I started reading my section.
Good.
Like part two of Maximum Clonage.
Yeah, I gotta read part one.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of responsibility and power in this microphone. Well, gang, this has been great. I'm having a great time. I will continue to have a great time next week with Derek. You can find more information at comicallypedantic.com. You can also follow us on Instagram by searching at Pedantic Cast. That is, again, PedanticCast. Pedantic Cast. New episodes come out on most Sundays on iTunes and Stitcher and Google Podcasts and Spotify and at comicallypedantic.com. If you have any comments or questions, you can send them in text or audio recording to comicallypedantic@gmail.com. Please indicate if you would like your name or your question read on the air. And don't forget that we still own comicsgate.com. If you would like to send a donation to the Games and Online Harassment Hotline, you can go through fuckcomicsgate.com because that's the whole reason that we got that domain. protect people. Yay. We will be back soon with another deep dive into the world of comics. But until then, you can find more and exciting adventures at your local comic shop. Bye.